Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, November 4th. I'm Ray Graff. Dr. Ron Scharf joins us today to answer your questions about your pet. Our Pets and Vets program is a popular one, so my advice, it's earnest advice. Call now to ask about your kitty cat or your dog. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dogs, cats, Dr. Ron Scharf, and your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today. Here to take your calls, Dr. Ron Scharf. Dr. Scharf is retired from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna. He is an 85 grad of the Veterinary College at Cornell and a long career in veterinary medicine. If you got a question about your dog or your cat, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Now, as I say every time, you don't believe me, but it's true. Get in line early. These shows get very crowded, and then we inevitably leave 10 or more people with questions unanswered. So call now, 800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. And it's always great to have Dr. Ron Scharf back on the program. How are you, sir?
I am so good, Ray. I have a great time being retired. I could have these leisurely mornings, read a couple of the newspapers, and take it easy.
The fact that you think this is the morning really, really speaks to the fact that it's, good for you, man. That's great. And I like talking about old music with you before the show starts.
Oh, that's good, too.
Get into that 70s vibe pretty good. And I'm proud to know that you got a good Zappa collection. That makes puts you even higher in my estimation. This email came in from, it's a long email, from DJ in Mountainville. You ready?
Got it.
Our 9-year-old female tabby recently had her annual checkup. Her blood work showed a creatinine reading of 2.2, and her renal tech index said that there was a good chance she would develop chronic kidney disease within the next 24 months. However, our vet said that the urine's specific gravity is the determining measurement. Our kitty's reading is high, but still within the normal range. Given her creatinine level, do you think we should start her on a prescription kidney diet?
Yes. The ideal thing is to find out why it's high. It is the case that older cats are very commonly afflicted with chronic kidney disease. However, 9 is not old for a feline. So I'd wonder, could there be something else going on? It may be that they just have an earlier onset CKD as the rest of the feline population. But what if it's something else? What if there's something in there? So you do a culture and sensitivity, make sure there's no bacterial stuff going on. Take some pictures to make sure there's no stone, a kidney stone, or other worse things than a stone. Mm-hmm. And just make sure that you're not overlooking possibilities. And otherwise, at least put on the prescription food, at least until that creatinine normalizes. And then maybe take her off, take him off, might be a good thing. But I would say that there is a blood chemistry that is even more sensitive than the creatinine. I would look into the SDMA SDMA, yes. And that comes up with kidney disease earlier than the creat.
What's the specific gravity of urine?
Oh, good question. So you need to be able to figure out how concentrated the urine is. And in order to do that, you need a yardstick. You need a marker. And the marker is water. Water is a concentration of 1.000. A normal cat's urine should be at least 1.025, or actually some people say 1.03 or 35 and up in order to consider them doing a good enough job concentrating their pee. But it doesn't always get up that high. So it's good that this cat has a good specific gravity, but that doesn't mean that there's nothing wrong going on because the creatinine's elevated.
Okay, Doc. Dr. Ron Scharf joins us today. It's Pets at Vets. 800-348-2551 is the number, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Jim writes, is it true that cats should not be fed milk because they're lactose intolerant?
No.
No.
I'm not aware of it. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I always thought that you don't want to feed them too much milk because of the calories and the fat content and that kind of thing. But I never thought that there was a inherently digestive problem with it.
Huh.
So I don't think so.
You know, it's funny. I was having, a couple weeks ago, we were having ice cream and sitting around, and the cat jumped up and went for it.
Oh, yeah.
This shocked me. There's sugar in there.
It's sugar. It's milk. I mean, come on. It's a cat's heaven.
I told her to get her own.
I'm gonna have to look it up because lactose intolerance in a cat. Who knows? Maybe there's something new out there.
One more email, Dr. Scharf, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551. This one's from Tom. Our cat is 14 years old. She's now blind. What causes blindness in cats? She's good around the house and lovable. And that's from Tom.
So many, many things can cause blindness. And it's usually a local problem, like in the eyeballs themselves. However, it could be neurological. It could be an optic chiasm problem, something in the brain that could do it. But there could be retinal detachment, which would be a product of high blood pressure. A lot of cats have high blood pressure that people don't know about because just like in people, it doesn't show obvious symptoms until something horrible happens, such as a detached retina. But it could be other things, too. So it could be some horrible things, some less horrible things. But I would check the it's just any vet could take a look at the back of the eyeball, the retina, and see is the retina where it's supposed to be, and see if there's any other things, such as hemorrhages. If there is a bleeding disorder and there's hemorrhaging going on in the eyeball, then that could have a definite effect on the vision, but other things can too. So the high blood pressure, I would look at number one after an exam, an ophthalmic exam, which could be done right in the exam room.
This is a weird question, but I mean, people who have high blood pressure and they don't know it, they'll often drop dead of a heart attack. Do cats get heart attacks?
Oh, yeah. Well, no. I shouldn't say they get heart attacks. They get catastrophic cardiac responses to high blood pressure. Okay, not necessarily heart
attack. Sounds like the same thing.
Hold on. They do have clots. Cats can form clots, which is the cause of a heart attack in people.
Yep.
Okay, it's a clot blocking a coronary artery. But a cat's clot usually would go elsewhere, either the end of the aorta, which is called a saddle embolus. So that's a cat that's all of a sudden paralyzed in the back legs.
Yep.
Not very common, but possible. Or a pulmonary embolus. The clot goes to the lung and causes a horrible situation there. As far as a coronary artery being occluded by a clot, I never heard of it in a cat.
Very interesting. Dr. Ron Scharf joins us. Let's grab one call here before the first break. 800-348-2551. Larry in Poughkeepsie. Larry, how you doing?
Yeah, hiya, thanks. All right, so I have a 17-year-old male cat in excellent condition other than virtually no vision. Just recently examined blood work, labs, vet said, excellent kidneys, very unusual in a cat that age. So the kidney litter box is on the lower floor. Cat uses the litter box for urine, will not use it for feces. He'll do it next to the litter box. He'll do it in other parts of the house, on a chair, on a bed, but he won't use a litter box for feces. I tried using two different litter boxes. Separating them. Any suggestions?
Yes. Could your cat have arthritis and doesn't want to walk up walk up or down the stairs in order for the poop, but can for the urine? Or it could be that the cat has a problem with the litter itself because it's going next to the box, you said, Larry, and not in the box. Have you changed the litter lately? I mean, the type of
litter. The cat does use a litter box for the urine, though.
Right. But, well, have you changed the litter?
The
just
type of
just out of curiosity.
Litter, right?
Yeah.
No, but okay. I have that on my list.
Okay. So this flies in the face of your saying that the vet said that the blood work is all perfect, but most cats, as you've already spoken about on this show, get chronic kidney disease when they're old. Your cat at 17 qualifies for that designation, old. So sometimes the numbers might not be high early enough to know that there's something going on, yet when the kidneys start going, Larry, the cat starts drinking more water. When the cat starts drinking more water, it starts peeing more. So Actually, you said that it's using the box for the pee and not the poop.
Yeah.
So I guess forget that. Forget what
okay.
I just said.
Fair enough.
I'm trying to think.
Also, the cat is during its whole life has always drank a lot of water.
Oh, okay. So is the wall of the litter box higher downstairs than whichever one was the one that
I have? I even got a senior litter box, which is a little lower, even though he has no movement issues.
All right.
And I've tried stainless steel. I've tried a senior box.
Okay.
A different kind. It doesn't.
You've done a lot of stuff, Larry. I'm thinking that we're in the realm of what goes on inside a cat's mind, inside a cat's brain, because it's very inscrutable.
Yeah.
A lot of times you don't know, because it could be a behavioral thing, Larry. I'm just, you know, you always want to rule out physical possibilities, but it could be behavioral for God knows what reason.
Larry, I'm sorry, but we're out of time here before the first break. In fact, we are overdue. Our guest today is Dr. Ron Scharf. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Ron Scharf joins us. The number is 800-348-2551. And Karen is in Niskayuna. Hello there, Karen.
Hi. Thank you so much, Dr. Scharf, for being on the show. Really
You're so
appreciate
welcome.
It.
It's my pleasure, Karen.
Thanks. I have an 18-year-old cat, 18-ish. She was a shelter cat. And she has developed a little tumor inside her ear, maybe smaller than a pea, and it's ulcerating, and she is miserable and has been for a long time. And I feel as though the vet told me that really, other than putting some, you know, Zymox with the hydrocortisone in it on it, that there really wasn't much that I could do about it. But she is incessantly scratching it. Little specks of blood fly out of it. I just feel like there must be something I can do to help her. Do you have any ideas, or does she just have to live with it?
No, I definitely have ideas, Karen. Not all of them are extremely successful, but, you know, it would require, any of them would require putting the cat under anesthesia, because you need to get some idea of where the ulcer is, where the tumor is, and whether or not it's something that you could do something about. So the best thing about doing something about is removing it. However, sometimes I've even had the experience where something was not removable and the cat was not amenable, or the owners were not amenable to doing a surgery which would maximize access. In other words, you could do a surgery other than the fact that the cat's 18. You could do a lateral ear canal resection where you can get sideways access to the ear canal, and that way you could take a tumor out. Or, even more radical, you could remove an ear, the whole ear apparatus, including all the cartilage of the ear canal. But that is way more aggressive than I would recommend in an 18-year-old cat. But even if you cannot do those two things that will increase access to the tumor, sometimes you could debulk it. And I've done that a few times when I knew that I was not getting a bad tumor out, but I was doing as much as I could without having done those other surgeries first. And it helped. And when you debulk it, you could do it with like a radio cautery or an electrocautery unit, so that you're stopping the bleeding at the same time that you're removing something. And I wouldn't put a lot of hope in that, Karen, but it is something, in answer to your question, something else that could be done.
Karen, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. This email from Anna, who writes, I'm an owner of three cats, ages 1 to 17. They all like different foods. My middle male cat is on a prescription food for urinary issues and uses Royal Canin So Dry. My old girl is the issue. She vomits the hard food almost as soon as she eats it. I bought a good quality food to mix with it, and they all seem to eat the prescription and leave the other, and the old one doesn't like canned food. So, my older girl has become more voracious. I had a complete blood panel and thyroid test, and they were happy to say her blood work was good. We love her so much, so we give her what she wants, and she wants turkey deli meat. We give her half of slice twice daily. Is that all right? If not, can you recommend good food that isn't canned or more like people food, or should I make it? I want her to get all the nutrition she needs being old. And that's from Anna.
Okay. So, Anna, there's a lot of things there. The 17-year-old, she vomits up dry food. One thing that you may try, if it's possible, it might be logistically difficult, is just feeding her small amounts at a time. Because many cats, when they eat too much too quickly, will vomit it up 5-10 minutes later. It'll chewed up in undigested form. And then all it takes is finding the lesser amount that you could present them at a time that they'll keep down. And then you could replenish that a half an hour or an hour later. So that's a real common thing, cats puking up food that is eaten too quickly.
Yeah.
So that's one way to salvage the dry food that would accommodate the middle cat as well. The turkey deli meat, the problem is it is not a complete and balanced diet. So, you know, the cat's getting more protein than it needs, maybe more fat than it needs, maybe less of other vital mineral, trace minerals and nutrients, etc. So it would be good if you can get the cat onto a commercial cat food that is a complete balanced nutrition for a cat. However, at 17, you know, you could say, you know, let the cat eat the deli food. You know what I mean? It's as a veterinarian, I should not be saying that. On the other hand, it's practical speaking. You know, sometimes with these cats, especially if you have three of them, you need a mainframe computer to figure out how to satisfy all their idiosyncratic needs.
Yeah.
So if you can get the cat onto a canned or a dry food that it doesn't eat too quickly, that would be the best.
Yeah.
And the voraciousness, the first thing I thought was the thyroid. You said the thyroid was normal. I would suggest if he or she is noticeably more voracious than 6 or 12 months ago, that you repeat the thyroid test 6 months after the first one, and maybe even do a more accurate, instead of what is called the total T4, which is a screen, do a free T4, which measures the active portion of thyroid that's available in her system. And just make sure that it's not hyperthyroidism, which is very common and is pretty much almost the only thing that'll cause a voracious appetite that is uncharacteristic for the cat at 17 years of age.
Okay. But the deli, the slice of the turkey, that's all right. I mean, if the kitty was fast enough to catch a chipmunk and ate a chipmunk, is there any more nutrition in that than a nice slice of delicious deli turkey?
It depends if the cat is eating the innards of the chipmunk, what's in the stomach, for instance,
yeah,
which is vegetables.
Yeah.
You're raising a good point, Ray. They are true carnivores, unlike dogs. But I do think, as you know, it's ingrained in me. It was ingrained in me in my Cornell education that nutrition is extremely important.
Yeah.
And that the absence of certain minerals or the deficiency of certain minerals might not show up for months and months.
Yeah.
So it's the kind of thing.
How many months left does a 17-year-old cat have?
Exactly. That's why I said the unthinkable about, that's an option,
yeah,
to let the cat stay on the deli meat.
I say get the cat a corned beef sandwich and just
go
to town, right?
Let's not get carried away.
No? All right. Let's go back to the phones then. And we go to Joe and Troy. Joe, you're on. Hello, Joe. You're on delay there, Daddy-O. Oh,
hi,
yes.
Can
you turn your radio down, Joe?
Hey,
Joe. Stand by. Whoa. Hey, Joe.
Shots,
unbelievable.
The slow kill method.
Hey, Joe. All right, we're going to. Joe, can you turn your radio down, my friend? You got to listen on the phone, buddy.
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's okay. We'll wait for you a moment here.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, you sound like you're in the shower, but go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. My dog tested positive for heartworms, and I was wondering, I did the slow kill method because I didn't want to do the shots because I read that it would really hurt the dog for like 6 months. So, you know, that would require the topical medication,
for the preventative along with the doxycycline for 30 days, which he did. And I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that with the heartworms. It just seems like a big deal.
Yeah. So how old is Doug, Joe?
He's 8 and a half.
Okay.
And he's very active. He's in great condition.
Great. Excellent. So the slow method is not a bad thing, even if you're going to be doing the fast method eventually, that many people, including myself, would do the doxycycline. Uh-huh. At least a month, I would have to look that up. That might be what is recommended prior to the fast method. Now, the shots, in my experience, I have not had sore dogs from doing the shots. Now, that's not to say it can't happen. As a matter of fact, way worse stuff than that can happen.
Uh-huh.
You're putting deep into the muscle astride the spine, you know, in the vertebrae, like just outside the vertebrae. So, yes, definitely bad stuff can happen. But I maybe I'm just charmed in my, you know, veterinary practice. Never had a dog that had a big little or a little bad side effects, such as you're talking about, sore for 6 months. So I would consider that, Joe. I don't think that it's the worst thing in the world to stay with the slow, but it would seem to me that the longer that those heartworm babies, the microfilaria they're called, are in there, they're causing trouble.
Yeah.
So, and the longer the trouble is being caused, you know.
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, should I wait maybe a month and get it tested again? Or
I think it would be too soon for a positive test to show negative. I don't think I would bother doing that.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, so I'll just wait on it. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Sure,
I appreciate
thing, Joe.
It.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. It's Pets and Vets today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And let's see who's next for Dr. Ron Scharf. Someone in the audio waiting room right now. Rick in Pittsfield. Rick, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. I've got a three-part question, if I may.
Okay.
I've got a dog, 2-year-old, who just lost her litter. And the third part is going to be about that. But since then, she has gotten, I guess what you call mastitis, since no one is nursing and she was backed up. So I've got two questions
mastitis.
On that. Mastitis. Mastitis, excuse me.
Okay.
So one is that the mastitis has now started receding and is going down because I have her on a relatively on a fast for the last 2 days, 3 days. The question is, do I start feeding her now again because it's receding, or I gotta wait till it's way down?
Well, Rick, I would not starve her for the sake of the infection in the mammary glands to get better. That's not a sustainable treatment. I would start feeding her. I don't know that the fasting is responsible for the mastitis receding or not. I would. Are you doing any kind of compresses? Any hot or cold compresses?
We're doing hot water compresses. We're doing. I read somewhere to put a cabbage compress on it, cold.
Cabbage?
We're doing calendula. I've given her Benadryl. Because that was part of the second question. She's also irritated the skin side of the area. And my question there is, because I got her a cone, but I've got conflicting information whether a dog's licking is actually antiseptic and promotes healing, or is it infectious and an irritant?
Good question.
Yes. I think it's more the irritant. It's more the latter, Rick, because it, you know, in the short term, it could be like a good thing to clean up an infect or an inflamed area. But the constant licking, what they do is they don't do it in moderation. They're obsessive about it, and they keep on going at it. And that's going to be a microtram each time they do it. And I don't think that the licking overall would be the beneficial thing to do. I do think that the cone or whatever method you use to keep the dog's tongue away from it is way better to do. I'm not sure about the Benadryl, why that's in there. Calendula, great idea. The compresses, great idea. Is she on an antibiotic?
No, that's why. No, she is not.
So it has not
gotten to that point where I thought it was crisis on the mastitis to go in.
Well, why does it have to be a crisis to use an antibiotic, Rick?
I don't know. I just don't know that answer.
I would just cover that base personally. I mean, it could be a non-bacterial inflammation. It could be a that's a possibility. However, it's not that big deal using antibiotics. I mean, I know that a lot of diehard holistic and integrative types try to avoid antibiotics at all costs, which I sympathize with up to a degree. But I think it's a relatively benign, non-harmful thing, as long as it's a short-term thing, to put them on antibiotics and then some anti-inflammatories, you know, just to take away the discomfort of the inflammation. You know, some...
Well, I thought that's what the Benadryl was doing.
No, that's an antihistamine, Rick. What you want is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. There are many types that are appropriate for dogs. I would not use human NSAIDs for dogs, such as ibuprofen. That's a bad idea.
Okay.
But there's Rimadyl and the generic form. There's Deramax and the generic form. There's a ton of, you know, dog-labeled NSAIDs that'll help with inflammation and, you know, take away some of the discomfort.
And then the last part of my question, if I may, is the losing of the litter. So she's a two-year-old. There's a lot of things here that I know I did incorrectly. She's a two-year-old. She's a pit bull. She's a, her litter mate is also here. They're together. They were not obviously neutered. And she had a litter of 12.
Wow.
And now lost two during or shortly thereafter the birth. But the other 10, when I finally was exhausted and I rigged up her kennel cage as a nursery, and I closed the door halfway, and I had her in a separate room, and I was sleeping outside that room with the other dog. And an hour and a half later, after I finally got to sleep, she came out and had a puppy on my chest that was dying.
Oh, boy.
And I went in to see the other puppies, and they were all dead.
Oh, man.
But
yikes.
They were not mauled. They were not torn apart. They were not really bitten, but there seemed to be a surgical strike
of a
bite into each one.
There was a bite.
Is
a
that?
Surgical. Yeah, she took it out on the litter.
Wow. That is...
She took out her discomfort on the litter. You know, she
That's not uncommon?
Well, it's not common, but it happens.
Yikes.
And, you know, they don't have the
but
emotional...
She was so caring before, during, and after. She's nuts about looking for them.
Oh, boy.
She was... I don't know if it was he or she, but I can't imagine that he came in and got past me, and there wouldn't have been a dogfight in the cage. I mean, all the little things that I fluffed up around to prevent the little puppies from falling in between a crack or something like that, nothing was disturbed. It wasn't even like she was disturbed.
Okay.
And she brought me one that was dying, and I brought her one out that still had a little life to nurse a little bit, and she took care of that as well.
Well, I could be wrong, but I would suspect the mom more than the dad that she might have associated the puppies with the discomfort that she was having, whether it was from the mastitis or just from the delivery or whatever.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know, Rick. It sounds like a horrible situation. I'm so sorry that you had to go through that and that she had to go through that. Yike.
Well, that was...
You know, the pits, they also have big heads, so delivery through the birth canal is a bit challenging, like bulldogs, as an example, need a lot of C-sections in order for them to give birth. Or these, you know, dome-shaped head dogs have a hard time squeezing those little tiny things out the birth canal. So that could have been another thing, but I'm so sorry. I would get the dog checked. If you're going to be having another litter, have the dog looked at by a vet just to make sure that all of your bases are covered, you know, nutrition and all that.
I need to take a break here. Questioning, once again, my career decisions. Dr. Ron Scharf is joining us on Pets and Vets today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Back to some more calls coming up. It's Pets and Vets, 800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf joins us today for the lighthearted fun. This email from Annabelle in New Paltz, a follow-up about my cat, Petal. I wrote in June about my naughty cat, Petal. She carries things in her mouth, specifically a stuffed snake, but would drop it in the toilet. You thought maybe she had maternal instincts. Well, we adopted a kitten, Posey, and Petal has taken her under her paw and is showing her the ropes, and she has not dropped her in the toilet. You were right. Thank you. And that's from Annabelle in New Paltz.
Oh, that's so great, Annabelle. Thanks for calling and telling us that.
All right. This one is from Tess. Let's see if we can make it 2 out of 2. Tess writes, just wondering how to keep a cat from habitually waking us up every single night. He knocks things off counters, claws, meows at us, jumps on and off the bed, etc. It's always around 3 to 5 a.m. We've tried ignoring him. He's an indoor-outdoor cat, but we lock him up at night. And that's from Tess.
Yike. So this is a cat, did you say, that's waking you up at 3 to 5 in the morning every night?
Yep. A male cat.
And is he intact?
It doesn't say in the email anything about the special parts there. No, it doesn't mention.
I'm wondering, well, if he's intact, I would make that not be the case.
Okay.
Number one, for various reasons, including this. If it is a neutered cat or a female, I bet there's something going outside at 3 in the morning that the cat is not able to get out for. And if that's the case, it's going to be tough to stop the cat from waking you up unless you just don't let the cat out, period. And then after an acclimation period of 3 to 6 months, during which time your lives will be miserable, it might get out of his or her system. But being that we are used to going outside for 18 hours a day, and how dare you not let me out for 6 or 8 hours of that day, I'm not going to take that lightly, and I'm going to demonstrate that to you.
Cats are like that. This one's from Tom. Tom needs some dog help. My 10-year-old German short-haired pointer can not get along with the other dogs to the point where they want to attack her. Very nerve-wracking walking her in a public place. Lovable around the family, though. Diagnosed with Addison's 4 years ago. Any thoughts on that? And that's from Tom.
So I'm thinking that this short-haired pointer is not able to get along with other dogs not in its household.
I think that's it.
It would depend on how long the dog's been like that, Tom. But if it's been happening for a while and the dog's 10 years old, it's going to be tough to teach an old dog new tricks or an older dog new tricks. There are certain things you could do as far as pheromones. There are portable pheromones that'll sometimes, you know, you could incorporate that into the collar around their neck.
And that just mellows them out?
Well, it might. It's usually not in and of itself enough to take care of a behavioral problem, more commonly in conjunction with other behavioral methods that you're trying out.
Yeah.
So it would require a lot of questions, Tom, to find out how long has it been going on, under what circumstances is it? Is it all dogs or is it just some dogs? Is it when your dog is near its own property? Is it have anything to do with the Addison's? If the dog
what
is well,
Addison's?
Addison's is too little adrenal hormone being made by the adrenal glands. And Addison's, it's called hypoadrenocorticism. It's what JFK had, and they hid it from the country because it was way less understood back in the early 60s. And it could be a fatal thing. It could be very serious, if not fatal. So it's not that common in dogs. Way more common is the opposite, which is Cushing's disease.
Mm-hmm.
But Addison's disease presents in a very nebulous way, and you have to have it high on your radar in order to make that diagnosis. But it is controllable. So if the dog is being controlled, which is not always easy, then I would not imagine that it's having any contribution to this aggression problem. But it is often very difficult to control it well.
Yeah.
So who knows whether or not that's having some play in what's going on here.
Dr. Ron Scharf joins us. It's Pets and Vets today. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We go to Tim in Saratoga. Tim.
Yeah. Hi, guys. Here's a different question for y'all. I have had cats in the past that were, quote unquote, smart enough to open a door, either by pushing their head through or by putting their little paw in there and pulling the door toward them. The last couple of cats I have, even though I try to train them and show them, it just doesn't connect. So cat intelligence, enlighten us.
Cat intelligence. Well, I mean, are your new cats playing a lot of video games?
No, I'm kidding.
Well, let's ask the doctor.
The one I've got now likes to chase chipmunks and birds.
Okay, fair enough. So, Ron, what do you think?
I don't think they make Stanley Kaplan courses for cats to open doors. However, it's hard for me to imagine, Tim, that you can't keep that door open for 2 inches, in other words, not enough for the cat to get through, but put a nice juicy piece of tuna on the other side of the door, just outside of the cat's reach of its paw, and just figure out the least challenge that you could present with the cat having to, you know, even if the door is 2.5 inches open, it may be almost enough for the cat to walk through it, but not quite.
Yeah.
And you want it to be just on the not quite side so that the cat can try to figure out, gee, that is a good smell, and I'm here on the other side of the door. This is an emergency situation. I got to, you know, marshal, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? So I think that the cats would figure out, I don't think they're dumb. I don't think they're remedial cats that you got the last two, Tim.
Yeah.
I think that they ought to be able to do it.
I think they're smarter. They're like, why? Do it yourself. I'm not opening the door for you.
Maybe they figure that if I don't do it, Dad'll give it to me. Yeah, maybe that's the
exactly. Train
you. Yeah.
That's the same as my children, Tim.
All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot. We
good
appreciate
luck,
it. And now to Helen in Athens. Hello, Helen.
Hello. How you doing?
Good.
My question is, I have a 6-year-old pit bull. She's very gentle. My husband, when she was a puppy, went to cut her nails, and he did it with the scissor type, not the guillotine type, and it twisted her nail.
Ouch.
From that moment on, we have never been able to cut her nails. We do have to tranquilize her before we bring her to the vet, and I was just wondering if there was anything else, because I hate doing that like every other month,
sure.
Because her nails grow so fast. We don't have, you know, we don't walk around the sidewalk, so they're not like grinding down or anything like that.
Oh, that's what I was about to say.
In the country.
I was about to say, take your walks on the sidewalk or the asphalt. But if that's not an option, first of all, I don't know if it'll make you feel any better, Helen, but you're in big company. I mean, there are many, many dogs that act like your pit as far as having the nails done. And I've said it before on this show that if you line up 100 dogs and give them 5 choices about what is the worst thing in the world that you like to avoid. And, you know, those things are getting a shot, having a blood draw, you know, clipping them with the noise and, you know, et cetera, and nails. I'm thinking 98 or 99 of those dogs will choose nails as the biggest thing that they want to avoid.
Yes.
Because usually, I assume, it's because they had a bad experience like your pity. And they just have this horrible orientation because it's going to hurt. So, you know, what you could do is, with the use of the tranquilizers, try to get the dog acclimated to a nail clipping or claw clipping that is way outside of the danger zone, just so that the dog can experience, oh, that didn't hurt.
Well, what do you mean? I mean, the nails aren't that big. What do you mean the danger zone? You got to be right at the nail to do it, right?
Well, it could be the danger zone. It could be by half millimeters or millimeters.
Oh, gotcha.
That you want to give at least 4 or 5 millimeters away from where you can see if your dog has nails, has claws that you could see through, you could see the blood vessel, but the nerve goes past that. The quick goes past the blood vessel. So you want to avoid the blood vessel by at least 4 or 5 millimeters. Now, if you have experience and you have a dog that's not freaking out, you can go probably 3 millimeters, but you want to bear in mind the anatomy is that the claws are curled. They're kind of like, you know, they have an arc to them. And the quick, Helen, is closer to the top. I don't even know if that's true. What I'm saying is that the angle of the cut makes a difference, and I like leaving the top of the claw longer than the bottom of the claw. So if you could just stay...
Okay.
if you start 6 millimeters away and you do it for, you know, several times, and then the dog says, well, that wasn't too bad. So then you try 5 millimeters and you do that for several weeks, and the dog thinks that's not too bad. And then you start cutting back and give maybe a half dose or a three-quarter dose of the tranquilizer. And little by little, you might be able to acclimate the dog. But I wouldn't get my hopes up high because, you know, this dog's 6 years old and she's had, you know, 5.5 years or more. Knowing that she ought to be freaking out about it. So you'd have an uphill battle.
I mean, won't the nails just break off after a while?
No.
No?
No, they won't. They'll curl, and they'll do a 360, and they'll start growing into the dog.
Ouch. Okay, yes. Well, good luck, Helen. Thanks for the call. Yeah. And let's go to Patrick in LaGrangeville. Patrick, you're on.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, how much you got? Do you guys take insurance? I have a cat who's like perfectly healthy.
Oh,
when
great.
He was about 2, and he started wanting to mate with his sister. I had him fixed, and then he got hit in the head by a car, and that knocked an eye out. But he seems much smarter since then. So he's perfectly healthy. He goes out. He pukes when he eats too fast. He eats chipmunks. He has all his shots and everything. He eats some cold cuts. He eats some rotisserie chicken. He eats some canned food, some dry food. And everybody says, well, let me pay for you to take him to the vet. I'm like, why does he need to go to the vet? He's perfectly healthy. So, I mean, I'm thinking that that's a problem to have a healthy cat, because everybody else's cat has diabetes and pancreatitis and everything else. So what's wrong with me that I have a healthy cat who's 11 years old?
Why are you calling this show, Patrick? Why?
I got one word. One word, Patrick. Rabies.
Rabies. That's a good point. Yeah, you didn't think of that, Patrick.
He's had his rabies shots and his rabies boosters. How many rabies boosters does an animal need? Answer me that, please.
Every 3 years.
Patrick, thank you very much. You know what? That's the call
there's
of the
other
day.
Things, there's other things, Patrick. There are other things that you may not know that are going on. For instance, 2 is kind of young, but a lot of cats get dental disease, and it has a big effect on the quality of life. And I personally am very big on cleaning animals' teeth, because every day they're living with teeth. How would you feel if you hadn't brushed your teeth in a few months or ever? Maybe you have some cavities, maybe you have some lesions, and they don't complain about it. They don't say, oh, my teeth hurt. They just deal with it. And so that's only one example, Patrick, of why it's good to bring a cat in. I think every year at that age is not overdoing it. I think it's definitely worthwhile to make sure nothing's going on. I'll give you another example. I once had a dog come in for a routine exam, a well exam, a yearly annual. I take a look at the mouth, and the dog has got a bottle cap lodged in the roof of its mouth.
Ouch.
And it had been there for a long time because the mucosa was growing over it, and the people had no idea. Now, oftentimes they don't, because they're not trained to be doing an exam on an animal. So the same with your cat, whether it's dental. I don't think your cat's big enough to eat a
bottle
or to get a bottle cap. But there are other things like broken teeth, Patrick. It's going out. It's doing all this stuff. It already got hit by a car once. Maybe there's broken teeth, and that could provide any bacteria from the world direct access to the bloodstream of the animal, okay, through that broken tooth. So there are many, many reasons that it is a good thing to take an animal in, a cat in, on a yearly basis. Even though you think the cat's healthy, you don't know.
So there, Patrick. So Patrick calls in a smart guy. Oh, my cat's fine. And now Patrick is terrified. Do you see, Patrick?
And
that's what you get.
And animal health insurance that you opened with, Patrick, is a great idea. I think it's totally worth it, and I have it for my own cats, my own cat and dog.
But to be clear, you don't work for the insurance company, right?
I don't take any money. I don't work with the insurance company.
And I'm not even paying you for this. So.
No, and they don't give a vet a break, because they used to. They used to give veterinarians breaks. Now they don't, and so I still do it anyway. I think it's worthwhile.
But you're not a cat guy, right? You're just dogs?
I love cats. What are you talking about?
Oh, because I thought there was some animosity toward all the cat calls.
Well, there's animality, but there's no animosity.
All right, let's go to Hassan in Albany. Hassan, you're on.
Hi. Thank you, doctor, for taking my call. I have a 14-year-old male cat who up until a week ago was begging for food and perfectly healthy, running up and down stairs. And over the last week, he's really kind of declined. I feel like he's lost weight, is much more bony, and he is very frail. Like, it literally has happened over the last week. He's still peeing. He's pooped. But, like, we have had to bring him whereas he used to beg for food and gorge himself, he now doesn't want to eat anything. We have to kind of mash him some tuna and water, and he'll eat that if we bring it to him and put it by his side. But he's an indoor cat. I mean, he gets out once, every 6 months and while we're outside. But I don't know what's going on. Do you have any ideas?
I have some ideas. But ultimately, Hassan, I'm going to recommend that you have the cat looked at by a veterinarian. My first idea is mouth. What's going on in the mouth? Did the cat break a tooth? Power of suggestion for the previous caller. Or is there a tumor growing in that mouth or something that is making the cat, even suddenly, stop eating and not feeling too well? There could be other things. It could be a sickness as well. Usually the sicknesses don't come on that fast, but they can. You could have an acute infectious disease. And so just to make sure, you say the cat goes out every 6 months. The cat has not been out in the last month or two, right?
No, the cat has probably been out once in the last month or
okay.
two.
So it could have been a trauma. It could have been, hit by a car like the previous caller's cat.
Well, we are always with him when he's outside.
Oh, good.
He kind of just goes in the backyard and chews on some grass or something.
All right, forget about that.
The other thing I didn't mention is his back legs seem to really not be functioning as well as they used to.
Oh.
It just seems like he's wobbly on them.
Oh, okay. So when was the last time that the cat was examined by a veterinarian, Hassan?
It was probably 2 months ago. He had...
No
he
heart
had,
murmur?
He had trouble passing. What's that?
No heart murmur?
No. He was having some issues passing poop, and it was, stuck. So they had to, extract it. And basically from that point on, they told us to put some stool softener in his food, which we've done.
Okay, so it could be that the cat's constipated.
I do have an appointment set up for him this week, but I thought I would call.
All right.
Constipation is my number one, based on what you just said, my number one suspicion. But a heart problem in which the cat throws a clot, which I mentioned a few callers ago, called a saddle embolus at the back of the aorta, can also cause a cat's back legs to not be working well. I'll go more with the constipation possibility.
All right. Well, listen, that is where we will have to leave it. On that note, Dr. Ron Scharf, thank you for being here, sir.
My pleasure, Ray. It's always great being here.
Always interesting, I'll tell you that.
As are you.
Well, I don't know. Support comes from Watercolors by Edith Schutzbury. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylics and watercolors, paintings of people and pets from emailed photographs. No contact required. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, Careers in Transition, LLC.com. I'll find out in a moment if my career is in transition. Hey, thanks again to Dr. Ron Scharf for being here today. Zach Malloy's our engineer. Susie Checkeye screened the calls just back from the West Coast. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. Chef Gail Sokol joins us, or somebody who will be hosting the show, with some ideas for Thanksgiving baking, everything from the breads to the desserts. And I hear she's bringing popovers. It's Food Friday tomorrow at 2 p.m. We'll see you for that one. Stand by now for the Capital Connection.